like a musician or an athlete or a scholar who spends years perfecting themselves in what they value. So if you look at it like that, then it's a beautiful challenge to transform some of the habits that we don't really have a value for into habits we do have a value for. It's a sadhana, it's kind of an enjoyable pastime.
It's like mostly it's when I'm insecure, and I can really see it acting out, and it's like, am I not taking responsibility for my...
But every time you do it, I would just pull back and be with yourself and say, no, you know, how would I want to do this? And if you want to, what's really behind my behaving this way? That's a really good question also, I found personally. But, you know, why? What's going on that makes me be like this? You know? And then that bringing that into consciousness can help. But the what's so important is your own patience, kindness, and patience with your own mind, giving it a chance, you know. Having respect and faith in yourself and in your mind. That you're a really good person and you're doing your best. These perfect people aren't out there. Good people are the people who are... When we talk about good people, the people who have beautiful values and are doing their best. And that brings a lot of peace to your mind because you're not so kind of pressuring your mind all the time to be this way or that way. Just doing your best.
So imagine how
ask yourself, you know, what's really, why am I really, like you said, it's because I feel insecure. So spend some time, like, talking to those parts of yourself and really understanding it. And you could say, well, next time let's try this. Because that's what, you imagine it, what would feel good. And then the next time comes and that thought can come. There's some things that are really deeply, deeply ingrained, and so... Sometimes it takes a while.
But what is the thing that I can see it before? That I know it's going to happen.
Yeah, but if you've made an auto-suggestion, then you have a plan. Otherwise, you're just saying, uh-oh, it's going to happen, it's going to happen. There's no plan. There's no other groove in your brain that's, you know, ready to take you on a different path. So by doing that imagination, it's like you're creating another channel, another path that you could go down. So now when you say, it's going to happen, it's going to happen, you say, well, let's try it. Let's see if we can respond this way. It's challenging sometimes because you have to go against your emotional reaction. You know, emotions always seem more real than thoughts. And they also have energy that propels you in a certain direction. Like anger will propel you in a direction, or frustration will propel you in a direction. You know, and so that's why it's good if you can imagine or work with it. Then before, when that starts to happen, you could say, wait a minute, let's try this before it's got really hold of you. Then it's kind of hard to stop. It's already become embodied and you don't care what the other direction is. You're already drowning in this one.
I must admit that I had this experience being here. I have this trauma therapy, mm-hmm. psychologist, and we sit and talk, mm-hmm. and sometimes she uses this, it's nearly like a hypnosis, mm-hmm. but I must admit that this meditation group you have and the classes and the yoga and when I attend is much more powerful tool to work my way through whatever trauma it has was I'm working with. Tremendously different. Yeah. It's sort of a bit stern because with this psychology I talk and repeat and I'm getting more and more exhausted. I'm more wrecked now than I was when I started. Mm. So I'm sort of
that's bad news.
And I sort of no, but with the psychology, that's really strong tools to approach to them. I'm very surprised.
that's nice.
And this morning I had this dream that was so clear, and I haven't had this clear dream for ages, and it was close to this these days we've had here, and it's really I'm not going to go into details, but it was I'm very grateful to you. And to you, Jenny, for inviting me here.
She caught you at the right time.
How much nishta? I think I've asked this before, but I can't remember. How much nishta, or how clear does the knowledge have to be for you to not come back?
I don't know. I would say probably when there's nothing in you that needs or wants to come back. Mm-hmm. So it wouldn't matter one way or the other, but there's no pravritti inside. Mm. You know, pravritti means like a inclination to, a pravritti, an energy going forward to do something, or to become something, or to have some experience. I want to just have this experience. And if that's there, then you probably will take another birth, which is not bad. I mean, you've had infinite births. What difference does it make? Mm. Take one or two or three or four more births. Who cares? It's nothing. You know, I mean, if there's something still needing some sort of completion, or the mind needs just more time to live with this knowledge, or whatever it is, then it'll. But say when you don't have any such feeling, it's just not there, you know, that you want to come back for something, that there's something left undone, something experience you'd want to have.
So some jnanis maybe have a vritti to come back and help others, like to keep the tradition going. And
but
for
that's
them
up to Ishwara. That means that's ahankara, really, I think. I mean, it could be Ishwara coming through the mind of that upadhi. That's a benign way to look at it. But otherwise, I think that the one who's really helping is Ishwara. the one that causes, you know, somebody like Swamiji to be born at this particular time. It's because the creation is calling on that. It's not because Swamiji in his last life thought, I think I should take one more birth to help all the beings.
No, I don't think so.
Mm-hmm. I think just his karmas and who he was and all of his prior life experiences and the puna was there, that he was the appropriate person to play this role.
Mm. Does he know anything about his previous life?
I don't know. Not that I know, but I don't know.
Mm.
I mean, even if you say, and again, there's nothing wrong with it. It's just to understand that, say you say, I want to take one more birth so that I can really have the pleasure of just serving and giving, teaching this knowledge and helping all beings. I'd like to have that. It's like I'd like to have that experience. I would like to do that good for the world and be in that position. That's a desire.
Mm.
You know, you want to have that experience. Mm. And there's nothing wrong with it, with that. That's a beautiful desire.
Mm.
But it's a desire.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
Does that equate to what is called bodhisattva?
Mm. I see the whole bodhisattva vow as a desire just to take one more birth and to be on this earth as an enlightened being.
Mm.
You know, it's a desire.
Mm.
I'm not a Buddhist, and they wouldn't look at it like that. They look at that bodhisattva vow as what happens when you are an enlightened being, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's another type of vow, and that means that you make a decision to stay and to help all beings. That's part of the bodhisattva vow. But they will also say is that that's really for your own antakarana shuddhi.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you live for, as a sadhana, to serve all beings, to be kind to all beings, which is really the ahimsa vow.
Mm-hmm. Also thinking, if you have knowledge and then have some desire to take another birth, then, like, if I would think about that, even though I know being in this world is 50% punya, 50% papa, it feels like with less core issues and less sort of attachments and things, it's going to be more pleasurable anyway, because the pain doesn't, you know, touch as much. Isn't that right?
I think that the more sattvic the birth, the more dharmic the environment, the less pain there is.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still 50-50. You still have difficult, in this human birth, you still have difficult situations.
Mm.
Even though the way you respond to it, it's difficult situations. It's not saying how you respond to it.
Mm.
You can respond in such a way that's much more peaceful and much more accepting and much more objective.
Mm.
And that kind of depends on your own kind of maturity.
So less suffering, but not less pain.
Maybe less suffering with the difficult situations that are there.
Mm.
Because of your acceptance and objectivity.
Mm.
Mm. I was looking at this bodhisattva vow also almost like a technique to drop some of your narcissistic tendencies of me and my enlightenment, maybe also.
Yeah.
Just to expand and thin out the walls of the ego.
Yeah, and some Buddhists actually talk about it like that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's more to do with how to be in this world.
Mm.
And you take a vow for that, you know. Another way, this is just close and tangential. If you think of the whole creation as infinite intelligence and as really your dream, the dream of the dream means the manifestation of yourself, not the body mind sense circuits, but the Atma, yourself. That just like when you have a dream, you as the dreamer, you know, that whole scenario of whatever is needed to fill that dream comes from the self. See what I mean? It comes from your being. We say it comes from the unconscious and all of that, but that's not the point right now. Still, there's also the unconscious or the causal condition of the Maya. But what I'm saying is that what is needed at any given time for any given mumukshu or for the world in general comes. It's part of the story. Whatever is necessary is part of the story. So the whatever jivas are necessary to come, you know, to take care of certain problems that are here, those jivas will take birth. That'll be their prarabdha. That'll be their mission. You know, like in all aspects of the world, really. And it will probably always be a war between the devas and the asuras. And all of the what we call itihasas, all of the great epics like the Ramayana, the Mahabharata, the Puranas, even within the Brahma sections of the Vedas, it's always, you know, the war of the opposites. But what is needed to protect the Dharma will always come. And so it doesn't have to be in the form of your particular upadhi. Your being will take put forward at whatever upadhi is best suited at that time to fill that particular need. So in that way, when you look at it that way, it's Ishwara's responsibility. There's an ahankara there to think, me as a jiva, you know, I want to take on that responsibility. And it's not a bad thing, it's still the ahankara. And it's like the benign punya aspects of the ahankara. Punya generating aspects of the ahankara. Let me take another birth so that I can help all beings, you know. But that's ahankara. Swamiji, when he was very close to dying, having, you know, given up his dialysis and all that, he made one of his talks. He told the sadhus, many of you may have read this, I can probably even find it and read it to you. He said something like, you have to give up all of your good deeds and all of your good works and the difference you've made, all of these things, you have to give up that. And you also have to give up the one who did all those things. He said, this is something very important for the sannyasis, because he was talking to all the sannyasis. This is important for all the sannyasis to realize. Because in the sannyasa vow, also, part of the vow is I give up everything on this earth, this bhūloka, the bhūva loka, the intermediate loka, I renounce cekta, I give up everything. The swarga loka, the highest loka, swaha loka, I renounce, I give up everything. All lokas. And let me just abide with abhayam, that I am afraid of no being. That I fear no being, and no being fears me. That's the sannyasa, part of the sannyasa vow. And so then I just live my life as being with what is, being with what's here, being with whatever Ishwara is providing, and living a life of abhayam. Abhayam means no fear. Bhaya means fear. Abhayam means without fear. Without fear too much. Feeling fear for myself or causing fear for others. It's a big vow to make. Only a jnani or a mumuksha can make a vow like that. Because it means that you're whole. You either are totally at home with your own being, or your commitment is only to the realization of the fact, that fact. Mm. So that your whole life, everything about your life is only, you know, living that fact, or gaining nishta, you know, gaining clarity in that reality. That's the sannyasa vow. That's why when Arjuna wanted to take that sannyasa vow in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna said, no, no, you wait. You live in the world as a kshatriya, and you do your duty with that karma yoga buddhi, you know, that's in that sense of karma yoga. And then you gaining this knowledge while studying, like he was studying there with Krishna, gaining this knowledge, studying, you live in the world doing your duty. And then whatever desires you have, you go ahead, and if they're within Dharma, you fulfill those desires, but accept all of the results of your actions as prasad. Prasad is in the temple when you go through a puja. You know, always prasad is handed out at the end. Prasad is like coming back. You're doing the puja to the Lord, and then the Lord gives you back something. It's called prasad. And so, when this prasad is given to somebody who's participated in the puja, you always take it. It's very sacred because it's from the Lord. It's, you know, it's prasadam from the Lord, so it's always taken very sacred. Even if it's a little bit of water, you always put it, you know, take it up to your eyes, or a flower, you take it up to your eyes. You know. You don't throw it on the ground or anything. If it's a flower, you put it over your ear. If it's a water, you often put it through your hair, you know, something like that. But always great reverence. And so they say, do live your life. And if you have desires that you need to fulfill, go ahead, fulfill them if they're within Dharma. But take the results of your actions, means all of the failures or the frustrations, or this isn't happening right, and all that, things that don't go right, because your actions always don't give you exactly what you want, of course. But you take all of those results with that prasada buddhi. So you're always in relationship with Ishwara, you know. So that the mind becomes more and more free. You become totally free of all your raga dveshas, your likes and your dislikes. They start dropping off. And that relationship with Bhagavan becomes just more and more what it's all really about. You know? And then your mind becomes very close, razor thin, so close to the mind of a jnani. The only difference is, you know, when he was doing the karma yoga, there's some ahankara there, kartritvam, doership. But the doership is always only in relationship to Bhagavan. All the results of the action, everything is only Ishwara. Whereas for the jnani, there is no kartritvam, the whole thing is Ishwara. I'm Ishwara. You know, the action is Ishwara, like the Brahmarpanam that we chant. The self is Ishwara. The action is Ishwara. The object of action is Ishwara. There's nothing here but Ishwara. But in terms of behavior in the Shantavritti, that the mind enjoys, it's very, very close. That Arjuna kept asking Krishna, what's the quickest way? Mm-hmm. What's the very best way for me to really gain this knowledge and abide in this knowledge? Can I go to the, like the sannyasis? Can I go to the forest? Wouldn't that be the quickest way? He asked him six times or so in the Gita. And Krishna always said, no, this is the quickest way. Because this way, you're gaining the knowledge all the while. Your mind is in your own world, gaining the antakarana shuddhi, that purity or that release, you know, from the likes and dislikes and all of this. Until your mind just enjoys being with Bhagavan. Doing your dharma. Then you're ready to take that vow. You give up everything, and your disposition isn't yet ready to give up everything like that. And then you're not supposed to do this, and you're not supposed to do that. It basically told Arjuna, you will just freak out. You know? You don't know what to do with your anger or with your, you know. You don't know what to do. Because everything's closed off to you. Your nature hasn't modified enough yet. Hasn't calmed down enough yet. So you have to stay here. Take your time. Keep shravana going. Shravana and karma yoga. It all takes care of itself.
What happens after the Bhagavad Gita? I mean, I've read a little bit in the war and the battle goes on and all the...
battle goes on and on and on.
Eventually get Duryodhana, but then is there any part of like Arjuna's life after the war?
There's some sad parts of it, like Abhimanyu gets killed, and then later a lot of the sons of his wife are all killed in a sneaky way by Duryodhana's people, and almost in the end, almost everybody's killed in the Mahabharata. Or, and then it's a story, I haven't read this part for a long time, I did read the whole 18 volumes once and I loved it, and I've just recently started it again. I have it on Kindle and you can get it for free on Kindle, or $1.89 or something, the whole Mahabharata in English. I love to read it, you know, you read it for a while and then you get used to the names and everything and then you're off into the storyline. Amazing. But anyway, at the end, they're all on their trek up to Swargaloka. Yudhishthira is with his dog. He's with his dog who has accompanied him for through thick and thin for so many things. And the brothers have gone ahead. And so by the time Yudhishthira gets there with his dog, the brothers have already crossed over. And the Yama's gatekeeper says something to Yudhishthira, you can come, with all respect, you're so welcome, because he was such a revered Dharmanishtha, you know, you are so welcome, you can't bring your dog, your dogs aren't allowed. And Yudhishthira said, my dog has gone with me all this way. And if I go, he has to come with me. Said that. So they let the dog in.
Did they?
Yeah.
In the version I read, it was different, actually.
Yeah, me too, I think.
Yeah.
Because then it was a test on
it. Yeah,
right?
He transformed. In my version, he transformed into someone. It was the test of his dharma.
Yeah, test of his dharma. Yeah,
and the dog
right.
became like...
became what it was. In
the
But... then it was more test of his dharma as he crossed over. Then he heard all of his brothers wailing and screaming in agony. And then he thought that they had gone to hell or something. And so he had to make a choice to be with his brothers or just go on to Swarga. He said, I'll be with my brothers. Mm. Yeah. And then that was a test also.
And Duryodhana was there
Now you're beyond. You have no more. You know more than me about it. I just don't remember all of that.
In the version I read, then he came up to Swargaloka, and the first thing he sees is Duryodhana.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's right. Yes. Oh my God.
And his brothers are not there, and he hears them wailing and screaming.
Yeah.
And so he goes to see them, and then he can bring them back to Swargaloka. And he asks someone about it, and. And then what this person says, whoever it is that's ruling there, says that the good people, or the people with mostly punya, I guess, have to go first exhaust a little bit of their papam, I think, in the hell world, and then they can come and stay in Swargaloka. And it's the other way for the... I think?
I don't remember.
Yeah, something like that. Other way for the...
Yeah. I was about 22 when I realized. But you might enjoy if you have if you don't have Kindle, you have to get 18 volumes. It's But I really like the. It's nice to read the non-abridged version because you get so much teaching and dharma and details, and it's really beautiful. Something you can just enjoy reading. You know, even if it takes 2 or 3 years. But I like really long books so I can enter into the book and just live in there. I love that. So this is a really long one.
Where do you find it?
I can show you on my Kindle, I have it with me, which version. There's different versions, and it's nice to get the right one. Mm. Mm.
Yes, please.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I have it with me. I can look it up.
I think that kind of ending, though, is a little bit...
Sobering.
Sobering?
Yeah. What were you going to say, that kind of ending?
If I remember right, that it's the other way around for the people who had done mostly papam, then it's kind of a little bit like the Christian myth, I feel. That first they go to a little heavenly world, and then they have to go to a hell world.
Mm. Well, you know, what's kind of interesting, too, is all of these are myths, and myths are more or less archetypal.
Mm.
No? They don't have anything... Worst thing about the Christian myth is everything is permanent. Hell is permanent. Heaven is permanent.
Mm.
There's only one life. You know? You go to heaven, you're in heaven. You go in purgatory, then you can work your way to heaven. Mm. You go to hell, that's it. Mm-hmm. You know? But that there is heaven and hell, good deeds and bad deeds, all of that, I think, is pervasive to most cultures and mythologies. Mm.
But I guess in the Mahabharata, then he's there in Svargaloka, and then it ends there. But then he's there for a while, and then he has to come back, right? To get knowledge.
That would be true. In Svargaloka, I think you can get knowledge in Svargaloka. There's Svarga Satyaloka and Bhuloka, this one. Mm. You can gain knowledge.
Mm.
When you're in Svargaloka, I believe you last there for as long as the loka, until the dissolution. But then you're still a jiva. Unless you got knowledge in Svargaloka, in Brahmaloka.
Mm.
Yeah.
I think you can get, Swamiji said you can get it at the same time as Brahmaji, somehow.
At the same time, usually Brahmaji gives it to you, but he probably knows more about all of this. I don't remember, it all gets confused in my mind.
It doesn't.
Yeah.
Mm.
I have a question. Ahimsa is of great importance, but are you allowed to defend yourself? If someone threatens you, then what about the ahimsa? You know?
I think you're allowed to defend yourself, just like dharma itself is situational. Swamiji talks about that quite a bit. And so if somebody is coming to strike you or hurt you in self-defense, you defend yourself.
Mm.
If you don't, it's not necessary to kill them, you wouldn't kill them. But if it's necessary to kill them, they'll be killed.
Mm.
It's like in the rules of war. Mm. War and being killed in war and all these things are not considered a dharma.
Mm.
Mm. So. But you're not really creating the act of violence there. You're responding to it.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. One thing is a little bit different than what you're saying, but I still remember I was in Rishikesh with Swamiji when I'd first gotten to India. I'd been in India maybe a month and three or four weeks before we went up to Rishikesh, and we were at his ashram, and we were sitting on his like little veranda patio in front of his kutir, and all of a sudden there was this young girl, I don't know who this girl was, but she was just walking by, and Swamiji got up, and within, I would say, a matter of seconds, he got up, he grabbed a stick that was against one of the posts on this little kutir, and he, in one movement, you know, he looked like one of these karate people, in one movement he hit the head of this cobra.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was going to strike this girl.
Wow.
And he killed her. And it happened so, it was blinding fast. It was blinding fast. It saved her life. Then people would ask, well, is that, and they did ask, is that ahimsa or himsa? Instead of something that needed to be done.
Mm.
Well, I guess that's what Bhagavad Gita is all about. We're living in the world of the polarities.
Yeah.
Situational dharma.
Situational dharma.
Yeah.
See, war is not a problem.
But breaking the rules of war is. See, when they fight wars, there are definite rules, and no one should ever break. Breaking that rule is a great. The rules are a great papa.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Hmm.
So in fact, like once Yudhishthira, who was revered for being everything he said was always satyam, always true. He would never ever tell a lie. And he was put into some situation where he said something. He just made a statement, Ashwatthama is dead. Where Ashwatthama is the name of it, was the name of an elephant. But it was also the name of Arjuna's son, who was a great warrior. And so when he said that, something like this.
Drona's son, I think.
Who?
Drona's son.
Oh, wait. Was Ashwatthama Drona's son?
Well, it was someone on the other side.
Okay.
He was saying it to so that person would...
Would lose their power. Yeah. Maybe that's
and their will to live.
Yeah.
So and then so, he just let himself be killed.
Yeah. And then what happened was, you see how I get these stories confused. This is too long ago. But anyway, what happened was that because of his satya buddhi that he had, his feet never touched the earth when he walked. But once he said that lie, and it was a half lie because the elephant died also. Mm-hmm. But that's obviously not meant. So then he. From that point on, he was planted on the earth. His feet touched the earth. Mm-hmm. So, something like that. Because it was a papa. Mm-hmm. The weather's changing just a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Rada, maybe time to go out of the sun?
Am I in the sun? Well, why don't I put some more? I should put some more stuff on it because I get that rosacea. Mm-hmm. You know what that is? It's kind of like a red rash on your face. So I have to be careful of that.
If you want, you can make place in the shade.
Oh, no, I'm good. I feel like I'm in the shade.
No, your face is still in the sun.
Half shade? Maybe. Where's the sun? I see the sun shining. Yeah.
I think with Mahabharata, it's like, it's so extreme.
It is.
How they keep their vows and all that it almost seems to me ridiculous, or like it doesn't seem sane.
Well, it shows how extreme commitment to the vow.
Yeah.
The most extreme.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just to make a point, you think?
Yeah.
Just to make us see what...
Swamiji said that before.
Mm.
About that. Yeah.
Okay, let's see what this is like.
Oh.
Swear.
Wow, that's just candy after candy being presented.
Oh, what is that?
Turmeric. It's mix for going on the
tour.
Looks like it's good.
Are you?
Some of these are cool. Jessica, can you please just look at the... Just the context?
This is so good.
What are you doing?
Same person. Same person.
Are
you
allergic
now?
Are
you allergic
to
me?
I don't
like that. Okay.
To be the first help here.
Okay. I'll take your
rice. Do you want next time?
I'm okay.
It's been
unlucky to it.
What was the parent?
Death.
What was the parent?
Death.
Mm. I just love these birds. Amazing.
But the war in in Mahabharata, or the Bhagavad Gita.
Yeah.
That's a really nice war, because it's quite obvious. It's not like today's war are extremely complex. Yeah, I mean, it's more based on, you know, a couple of rakshasas that want some money in some weird way, and then they infiltrate a whole nation of propaganda, thinking that you should go to war because you should defend your nation.
Exactly.
I mean, all this. I mean, it's all so many levels that you have to now. It falls on the individual. Okay. That kind of war is like, no, we know where we are. And we know what our duty is.
Yeah.
Now we don't know.
Mm-hmm. We don't know at all.
Sweden would
no rules.
Yeah, Sweden would go into war for what? Like that's the first. Like, and with whom and for what and why? What's my relationship to that?
All these lives are being given to. Looking so correct.
What I think seems not to make sense also in the Mahabharata is how all of these wise people end up fighting on the adharmic side, so to say. And I know the reason is because they're committed to Duryodhana for different reasons.
Yeah.
But it just doesn't seem to make sense that that would be their dharma.
Well, their dharma, they should have decided not to take all of Duryodhana's money and homes and being taken care of by him in the first place.
Because they saw back then that
he's
on the short side.
Been totally, total rascal.
They saw then also that he was a dharma.
And when he pushed the Pandavas out, they could have decided to leave, but they would have had a hard life, you know. So they didn't make that decision.
Mm.
And then now they've lived under his auspices for so long, so many years, over 12 years. You know that it was their dharma now to stay.
So it's kind of like a problem for them having to fight.
But then Bhishma was the one who said, I'll just commit to who's ever king. And that was almost ridiculous.
To be the elder to the king.
It just seems okay. So they did that for so many years, but then at least now, can they not defend the dharma?
Give me some of this. Good stuff.
That's protecting the whole.
I'm sure these are all questions that are really up for discussion.
Mm.
Even that they decided to stay with him, or they couldn't convince him. Of course, nobody could convince him. His father couldn't even convince him.
Mm.
Yeah.
Then maybe there's a point of you wanting it to discuss it too.
Mm-hmm.
It's like working for Monsanto or something.
Yeah,
you have to support your family or whatever, and committed to that, but then.
Mm. Yeah.
Stuck.
Would that be a problem? Mm. If I had to work for Monsanto.
You won't.
But this is an example. Mm-hmm. Which I know is such a rakshasa company. Would that be papa?
It could be a papa that you are put in that situation. Your prarabdha karma.
But
what if you went
produce?
To worked in it as a proponent of it?
What's a proponent?
Mean that you were supporting Monsanto. That would, if you knew what you were doing, I think that would be really a papa.
Mm-hmm.
Because you would, if you understood.
Even if you don't have any other means to support your family, for example.
If you were doing it because, I don't know, it's all complicated, I don't really know.
Yeah.
But anyway, if you were doing it because that was the only work you had.
Mm.
That's a little bit different than doing it in support of what they're doing.
Mm. Mm. Yeah.
Same with like in the, all these very poor people are working in these slaughterhouses and on all the immigrants and things. They have no other place to work. And it is absolutely horrible for them and for the animals. But they have to make money. And that's how that there's these towns, especially in the southeast. They're slaughterhouse in America. Yeah. They're slaughterhouse towns. That is the, what people, that's their job.
Wow.
Yeah. Very little else. You know, it's all about supporting this huge, these huge slaughterhouses. That would be such a papa to your karma, putting you in that situation where you had to work in some horrible, horrible situation. What about being a prison guard? Mm-hmm. That's not a very nice job. Mm. You're also living the life of the prisoners in a way.
Amazing thing to me is just there's people for all these positions.
Yeah, absolutely.
They get filled. Somehow.
Yeah. Horrible.
Are we getting calls? Did you want to turn this off? Should I record that? I mean, take it away?
I didn't know you were recording it.
That's why I threw it up.
Oh, I thought you threw it up because I wanted to know what time it was.
Oh! Well, I wish that's why. 4:10.
Oh.
Actually, it doesn't seem like I was recording it because it's not on. Mm-hmm. Oh, it is on. It's just 6 minutes.
This last one. Maybe it's time to walk
a little. Move and walk or something.
Yeah.
That's what I feel. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Shall we bring out the
banana peels?
Sana.